Okay. Hello and welcome to the Cinebums podcast with John and Luke. It's our first episode as a duo we've done in a little while. John, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Excited to do this. I think the last time it was just a Luke and John episode was the Santa Claus, which was Christmas time.
Yeah. Fucking April.
Yeah, it's April now. And yeah. I think we've just done, we've done our end of the year recaps and the bummies. But that's pretty much been all of our episodes that we've done, at least.
Yeah. We hope everyone enjoyed. I mean, the bummies, I enjoyed the bummies. I know John enjoyed the bummies.
Yeah, I had a great time.
You seemed drunk, and I thought for sure you were drinking alcohol. And I think Jake told me after that was yerba mate. And I was like,
yeah,
that makes sense. Because it was like probably like it was like 11 o'clock maybe your time when we started or noon. Yeah. And I was like, yeah. I was like, I didn't know John was that like, you know, rock and roll that he was going to start his day with like gin and tonic like that. You know what I mean?
Hey, you know, I feel like 2024 rock and roll where I'm having a yerba mate.
Yeah, that is kind of, that is 2024 rock and roll.
Yeah, but that's a little behind the scenes. That was a yerba mate in a glass. On the rocks, it was not alcohol, but yeah, I actually feel like when we do those earlier in the those episodes earlier in the day, I have so much more energy. It's probably because I've just had my coffee,
after your job or whatever. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course that makes sense. Yeah. So yeah, but now I'm you know more relaxed. I do have a drink with me, which I don't even like drink at home all that much, but I was feeling like doing it tonight. I'm pretty relaxed, and we're going back to our movie benders, which we haven't done in probably over a year.
I think it's been like since definitely before 2023. It was something we used to do a lot, and I don't think there's any specific reason for why we stopped, but you know, there's a chance we were overdoing it, I think, but if we were overdoing it, that's also because I think we liked doing it so much. And it's something we really enjoyed. And it's something that I think was also our signature for a while, because we just enjoyed so much being able to say, this is what movies we watched during this past week or a couple weeks or month at times. And yeah, that's our thing. So it's like, we should get back to it. I think that like, it'll like take us back to our roots and, you know, get us back to like why we've been doing a movie podcast for this many years to begin with.
Yeah. I just looked back. I think our last one was May of 2022. So it's nearly 2 years, almost 2 years exactly since our last one.
Yeah. And I've had like, there are many times, there's been, you know, in terms of like, I say a history of the movie bender, I think, you know, we always started off maybe at first when I ever, John and I started doing a podcast together, we were like, hey, this is our topic for the day, blah, blah, blah. Just to break the ice, to get the awkwardness, I think, out of the way, we would just be like, let's talk about what we're watching, you know, like let's get going, you know. And I especially recall I needed that a lot, because I was new to podcasting. I did not know how to like express myself on it. I was like, I didn't know, like I was either like at 0 or 10, you know. And honestly, a lot of the days I had spent the whole day like, you know, smoking weed and watching movies. And then suddenly I would like get on a Zoom with John from high school and I'd be like, hello, John. Who the hell are you?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's, I feel like the movie benders were always like the ones we would go to, like when we needed an episode, like what's this episode gonna be? We're like, well, we've watched a bunch of shit the past month,
sure,
so let's do
in
that
a time crunch.
Yeah,
I mean, almost for having like no real topics, no real reason to say why we're even doing this podcast, you know what I mean? We had no like niche about our podcast whatsoever. I think like you were at first being like, work, you know, when you did it by yourself, you were a classic movie podcast. I came on and we never probably did that. maybe we did it like a little bit here and there, but it very much became bigger. And yeah, like I think we just started to have so much fun talking about what we've been watching. I don't know about you, but for me, it was like,
I hated very, it. Yeah.
See, that's the one thing we disagree upon. For me, it was life-changing. For John, it was like a snoozer.
Yeah. I just was doing it because I felt bad that if I said for no.
Bad for Lou. Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I know it really, thinking of movie benders really brings me back too. Cause I guess we started it before this, but when I moved to California and was working remotely, this is just before COVID. I didn't know anybody. And so I was working from home and I would just sit on the couch with my laptop and just have movies on all day. Yeah. And then I would talk to, then I would hop on a Zoom call and talk to Luke and just talk about everything I watched. Yeah. So just thinking about it brings me back to like those days. If my employer knew how much I was literally just watching movies and hardly working, you know, who knows what they would think, but.
I was always very, I remember impressed. I remember like there was a point where, cause I didn't have necessarily a full-time job. I worked at a bar, you know, like that's not a, you know, my job was ridiculous and it gave me a lot of just downtime to sit and watch movies. And I really didn't dedicate much of my life. I think during this period of time to anything else, but that it was like, I had a bar job and I watch movies and, you know, I consider myself a writer. Sometimes I write, that's it. But I remember thinking like, wow, John like has like a wife and look at how many movies he's watching, you know? And like, you would tell me about a lot and I'm like, he's getting and I was like, John's getting really deep into this shit. And I was like, John doesn't even want to like, he's not an inspiring filmmaker. Even he's just doing it for the love of the game. And I remember like just liking that a lot, because I was like, he's watching as much as me, it's perfect.
Yeah, and there's a time when we first moved to California too, is Carly was working nights and
yeah, so you had your the space pretty
so
much.
Yeah, even like, and she's I know she started out like doing like some days and then some nights, but however it worked out, there was a lot of time where the two of us like weren't awake at the same times and weren't doing the same thing. So yeah, I spent so much time. I was like, this, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be in a situation where I can just watch movies all the time while I'm working. So I might as well take advantage of it. And then like 6 months later, COVID shut everything down. And then that was my life for the next,
for sure. I mean, yeah, so. Similar thing to me, like, except mine goes even a little further. Before COVID, I was in a big, I don't know, drifting transition phase of my life. And I think I had like, I quit whatever my bar job, bar job in Chicago. I started freelancing, you know, doing film stuff. In the summer, I was very busy, you know, but even if you're a busy freelancer, you still have more time than a worker. You just do. So that was fantastic because I just still had so much free time to do stuff I wanted, including watch movies. And then the summer ended, the freelance really stopped, really slowed down. And I was just suddenly, you know, and a lot of freelancers can relate to this who do freelance full time. You have, you know, your crazy busy times, you have your slow times. And I hit that slow time and I just never could not find anything really significantly after that for like a couple months to the point where it's like, okay, you're not really freelancing anymore. You're unemployed, you know, you're sitting at home. And then I was like, I kept, you know, I had this stage of like, I'm resisting getting a regular job again because I'm so addicted to this, you know, freedom, and like I'm so addicted to not leaving the house. I'm so closed in now, you know, in my apartment. And I was, I was just watching a shit ton of movies. It was ridiculous, and shows as well. And I think I like did not get a job till like the month before the pandemic began, like one that I stuck with at least. And then the pandemic began, I got furloughed. And like you said, that was now this is my life. And I was like, why now I'm stuck in this, you know?
Yeah.
So for sure. I relate to that.
Yeah. And I still feel like nowadays we've gotten back to regular life, I guess, but we're still fitting in the movie benders. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like now there's just more strategy that goes into mine, at least, where I'm thinking like, okay, I go to work and then I got to go do this thing. I'll be home by like 9:30. If I start a movie by 10, I can hopefully get to bed by midnight, and then go
how
to work
realistic.
The next day.
Yeah,
Like,
it's so realistic now.
Yeah.
I'll bring this up again, but like I was telling John before this about this like new article I'm writing about, something that I think I know a lot about, but I'm currently not doing super great at, as great as I'd like, but it's how to realistically watch as many movies as possible. It dives into what the strategy is to watching lots and lots of movies. And one of the, I even go into how do you go about it if you have a totally free day? Like you have a totally free day and you're just saying you're going to do that. What is the best way to go about that? Because I kind of think that some people think it's like easy. They're like, oh, you say your goal is to like want to watch a lot of movies. They think, oh yeah, that's easy. But it's not. It's like not as easy as you think, specifically because it takes like, you know, it takes energy, it takes attention, and it takes a like research. It takes, you know, planning out a schedule, planning it out around your schedule, and committing to it. It's not as like simple. Like people, I think, can do it. Most normal people can do it, say, for like a day or something like that. Like, oh, last Sunday I just sat there and watched movies and it was great. Yeah, it was easy, you know, blah, blah, blah. But to do it, you know, throughout the week, course of the week, all, you know, and try to fit it in consistently, that's where I think it's hard. And also building movie fatigue as well. There's fatigue. There's like, you want to get out of your apartment, you know, while you're trying to do this. You want to like go take a walk. You want to like also not let your life totally fall apart. You want to go get groceries and like make sure you're fed. You want to like not totally neglect your partner or the people, whoever is in your life. There's like, so it's a loss. There's a balance to it. If you want to do something that is very closed off and time consuming, which being a Cinnabum is.
And all those themes will for sure come up tonight in this movie bender.
I don't know about you, but like on a scale of like, say, like we're both men with women in our lives,
ladies.
ladies. Now I have that. For years I didn't, but now I have that with you. So we can talk about that.
We just use this to just talk about being a guy and having our lady not having dinner ready when we get home. And
well, on a scale of like, say, like 1 to 10, like how into movies is Carly? You know,
I'd say before we started dating, she was probably like a 6, and now after we've been together for almost 10 years now, and now I'd say she's like an 8 at this point. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I think being married to a Cinnabum has enhanced that. And I actually have one of the movies on my list for today is a movie that we almost watched together, and it was kind of out of spite of her, or a spite of me. making her watch like more of auteur movies or like cinephile movies. And so one of those, like we just watched because it was on TV one like Sunday morning when we had nothing to do, and she was like, "We're watching this because you always make me watch, you know, whatever
Whatever
fucking
bullshit, yeah. This useless thing to me that
yeah.
gives me no comfort at all. It just
Yeah.
it's just ambitious cinephile crap, yeah.
Yeah, and I just like I
Yeah.
try to convince her that she's gonna like it. It just sounds weird or different, but she's you'll
Yeah.
like it, yeah. But yeah, I'd say she's kind of gotten to an eight now because she gets excited to go and see things like in the theaters that comes out that might not be just, you know, a totally mainstream movie that
Yeah.
like, everyone's talking about.
Yeah, so with my girlfriend MJ, I think she started off at like 4 or 5, and I think like we've only been together a year. So you've got, you know, it's like say who's the guy in the Spurs? I'm like Victor Wembanyama or whatever, and
Wembanyama,
you're, well, yeah, Wembanyama.
Wembanyama. I think it's Wembanyama or Wemby. It's Wemby.
Why does every single one now have like a ridiculous name, like
What happened to Michael
Antetokounmpo, you know?
Jordan? You know, why can't they just be like
Yeah.
easy to remember? It's
Two names that I'm very familiar with put together.
Pete
But
Rose. Yeah, like.
yeah. So I'm like him, and you're like Giannis. I don't even know if he's been, or you're more like Kevin Durant or something like that. You know, overrated.
Whoa.
Only you ride Steph Curry's like coattail.
I'm driving the
Like
bus.
you wouldn't
Hey.
have those rings. You wouldn't have those rings. Yeah. That's a quote of his, right? Yeah.
That's
Yeah. You wouldn't have those rings if you hadn't been on Golden State.
Wow. I
But
thought you were gonna say Tim Duncan and I was gonna start like weeping out of
weaving.
but no, you called me
No,
Kevin
I took
Durant.
it a totally different way. But anyways, yeah, so like you have like a lot of more years under your belt, but I've definitely gotten her more into it. Like first was AMC Stubs. She got into AMC Stubs and she was like, "Oh, I love that we can just it's like an easy date thing. We just add the movies together. We can easily go to the movies." And she started to get into that, like, "Oh, we can see that now, looking at the app, see what's playing." So, and you know, she saw things that I was always, you know, I was kind of like curious while we were seeing it and being like, "Oh, what's she gonna, how's she gonna feel about this one?" Like, Poor Things. I was like, "Well, how is she gonna fall asleep? Is she gonna be like, why did we see that? That was so stupid." And when like, I think I showed her like Bummies categories, Oscars categories during award season. She's like, "Oh, cinematography, definitely Poor Things, you know, like stuff like, you know, stuff like that." So it's like, I mean, Poor Things didn't scare her off, you know. And as someone say who's used to being like very, you know, I'm really used to being alone. It's very like new for me to like be with another person and see like, hey, you know, like, why isn't her agenda just to watch these movies? You know what I mean? Like, I'm still like wrapping my head around that. I'm like, no, like she's different from you. She has different interests. She doesn't like care, you know, as much. So sometimes I think I ask for like a little like, you know, a little much. Like, so like we're watching Breaking Bad now because I'm like, you have to see Breaking Bad. It's important you see Breaking Bad, blah, blah, blah. And we'll be watching it. I'm like, hey, you're on your phone during this really intense scene. Like, stop that. You
Yeah, I
know,
know.
like,
I
like, you don't
I get
realize how
nervous about that.
important.
I'm like, no, why you like do you hate this? Like, why are you looking at your phone? But then
Yeah.
I
And
do
I'm
the
like,
same thing
this
too.
isn't
I'll, yeah.
right. You're in a new thing, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll say like this is important to me, and I sound like so silly, I think, to her. I'm like, I'm really passionate about this show. And then when we first moved in together, I showed her Goodfellas. Like first day after we move in together, I'm like, we're watching Goodfellas because you need to see it. And you know, like, yeah, I mean, she's definitely more into it, like, 'cause she's with a Cinnabum. And I like, I hope to continue to influence her Cinnabum nature,
Yeah.
but also with a healthy level of acceptance of, like, all right, like, let her also, you know, watch Gossip Girl, watch
The
TikToks,
Real
you
Housewives,
know. Yeah, because she
yeah.
has all that, you know what I mean? She doesn't, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty much that's it. So yeah, I just wanted to, like, touch base on that, because, like, I don't
Yeah.
feel like we've talked about that since, like, I got into a serious relationship. I think being in a serious relationship affects how much you're able to be a Cinnabum, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, that part of it is new is new to me.
Yeah, I know there's been times where she's been like away for a weekend visiting family or something, and I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna take like one day, like this one Sunday, and I'm just gonna watch all this stuff that she, I know she won't watch with me,
Right,
and just
right,
like
right.
fit it all in this one day. Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, those are the sacrifices you got to make.
It's the price we pay, yeah.
That's the price you pay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one thing would be interesting. I don't know. I had this idea one time, is, like, say, if we were to be bold enough to have both of our girls on, and they talk, and the episode is like life living with a Cinnabum, or life with a Cinnabum, or something like that. And, like, for instance, I'd love to hear some of Carly's stories, because I feel like I always used to picture, like, especially when you were watching a lot of stuff, like, you on one side of your apartment and her on another side, and you're just there, like, staring at, like, some random ass, like, Wong Kar Wai or, like, Bong Joon-ho thing, and she's, like, over there, like, looking at the credit card bill for the past month, or something like
Yeah.
that, you know?
Yeah. And I'm just like elbow deep into a barbecue chip bag watching a Bong Joon-ho movie. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much, you described it pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, we're just getting back to doing the movie benders, pretty
Yeah.
much.
Yeah. So
That's
the
all
movie
that really,
bender.
that's all this really is about. I think a movie bender, what it is pretty self-explanatory. Yeah, you're just watching a lot of movies within a certain time frame.
Yeah. As people say
You know,
binge a lot, but
right,
to
now
me,
people say binge because that's show, you know, with,
yeah.
yeah, but movie, it's like, you know, they're all separate things. You gotta, like, pick them one after the other. It's not as easy. Netflix doesn't go 4-3. It doesn't go 4-3-2-1 next movie. It's not just like that as easily, you know.
Yeah.
So
It's kind of,
movies,
it's going from one bar to the next, you know? Yeah.
yeah, exactly. So at one point you're at, like, La Taqueria Cerveza Mexicana, and then you're going to Maggie's Irish, and then after that you're going to O'Hallahan's, which is just also Irish.
And
Yeah,
you gotta
exactly.
find the Ubers and get in your Uber and get there, and
Right.
that's like
Yeah.
scrolling through HBO Max or something, you know? It's
Yeah, no, that's very true. It's very, yeah, it's very
yeah.
similar to that. Or you need a Blu-ray, or you're like, oh, you're like, where is this streaming? Is it paid? Is it they're a Blu-ray? Do I have enough time? There's a reason why people don't watch a lot of movies nowadays, sadly, because there is that stuff you have to factor in. Yeah. And you got to be, like, say, like my brother, who's really on top of it always. He knows his agenda. And he's consistently able to, like, be like, I'm gonna rewatch this that I know I need to see again to understand it more. I need to, like, now get to this from this director that I haven't seen. Like, I haven't seen the sixth Soderbergh, you know what I mean? That's, like, the one I still have to see. Yeah, it's a real big hobby that requires a lot of research, a lot of alone time, and a lot of effort. It's not as easy as you'd think.
Yeah, for sure. The one I'm going to start with is a 2024 movie, actually. And it is currently my number one movie of 2024. But it's also because it's the only 2024 movie I've seen so far. I haven't seen the new Dune yet. I
Me
haven't seen
neither.
Ethan Coen movie. I forget what else is out now. But yeah, I've been
The
slacking
Kristen
it.
Stewart horror film,
Yeah. Love Lies
everyone.
Bleeding.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet.
Me neither.
But what I have seen is Academy Award winning director Peter Farrelly's Ricky Stenicky,
Oh, I wanted to see that.
which is on Amazon Prime. Be completely honest, I did not like this movie. I think my feelings towards it are a little more harsh just because I was kind of tired of this type of like I don't know, this type of like bro comedy. And it's just so funny thinking that Peter Farrelly, the movie he did, I don't think he's done something in between this and Green Book, but it's
It's like
so.
Dirty Grandpa, right? I think
Did he do that too?
that's the Farrellys.
But still, this is he's going back to his, comedy, straightforward comedy roots.
Right. Sorry, man. No, it's not. I interrupted you for no reason on that one.
Who is that? Who is Dirty Grandpa? Or who?
Did they produce it at least? Why did I think they had something to do with it?
I mean,
It's
it seems
Dan
like.
Mazur and John Phillips. The reason why I'm thinking of, I don't know why I'm thinking of.
Is Zac Efron in that one too?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's also in Ricky Stenicky.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I thought they were connected. For some reason, I thought for sure this was Farrelly Brothers, but it's not.
I mean, it seems
Shit.
Farrelly Brothers adjacent,
Yeah,
so.
that's what I thought. Yeah.
But yeah, this is Zac Efron, Jermaine Fowler, and Andrew Santino. They're like they're best friends who they try to do some prank when they're younger and it goes wrong. It turns into arson, and this isn't a spoiler. It's the first scene, and then they decide to blame that on a made-up kid, Ricky Stenicky.
It's
I
like a
forget.
lie. It's a lie that manifests, right? It just turns into the whole movie, right? That sort of
So that's
thing.
the whole thing is
This
that
old
these.
school plot device,
Yeah,
right?
it's
Yeah.
their pact since they were kids that Ricky Stenicky did this. So, they've even lied to their now like wives and their families that Ricky Stenicky is a real person who did this, but he's their friend and
I
he's
see
this.
the flashback now of like Ricky, their kid, Ricky Stenicky. It sounds like so Sandler, you know?
Yeah, I forget how they came up with the name too. Yeah, so they basically go along this whole thing that this is a real person, and of course the cops are like so incompetent they don't like do any further digging. They leave like something behind to make it seem like it's this kid Ricky Stenicky that did this, and they're like, oh, I guess it was him, and then nothing ever happens because he doesn't exist. So yeah, then they chaos ensues or whatever when. It slowly starts to build up where, for some reason, they have to, bring in a fake Ricky Stenicky to pretend to be, because they would use this to go, they would like go to Atlantic City and gamble and tell their wives that they were going to visit Ricky Stenicky, who was sick in the hospital, or something like that.
The lie
And
runs really deep.
And so they ended up, while they went to Atlantic City, they met John Cena, who was kind of like a failed actor. And they decide to, once they realize they have to have this plan of bringing in a fake, an actor to become him, they hired John Cena to be Ricky Stenicky. And the humor was just so, it's just so lowbrow, which I don't mind lowbrow stuff, but it's not even like funny lowbrow. It's just kind of tired stuff. Like,
Yeah.
it's when you start to think, like, I feel like every joke's been made on the internet now that there's like nothing new that like a comedy can show me. And I'm also not that big of a fan of Andrew Santino, if I'm being honest too. Yeah, I don't know. I've never really found his stand up to be that funny either. And he also has some bits that are almost like word for word Bill Burr bits from like 15 years ago, but he's never gotten flack for that. But anyway, that doesn't have to do with his like comedic acting. But I think John Cena was actually the funniest part of this, and he was pretty funny. But yeah, I think I was just harsher on this because I was just not into it from a very early point in the movie. And then it got to a point where I was like doing other, I was starting to like, do the dishes while I was watching it, or like, do some other things around the house to get through it. But yeah, that's,
You're done from the get-go.
yeah, done from the get go. I just don't have a whole lot of patience for these. I probably, honestly, I can't believe I didn't skip it, because I think I would skip something like this nowadays. Like Dirty Grandpa, I skipped. I think there are just some comedies like this nowadays where I'm just not even putting the
Yeah, I mean,
time into.
this leads putting it on the I skipped it bummies
Yeah.
category, like just from the get go, like Ricky Stenicky, like
Yeah, right. So yeah, that's Ricky Stenicky. I wish I didn't actually start it on such a bummer, but
I could tell right away. I was like, oh damn, Josh started off with something he did not like at all.
And I
That's
should
fine.
have, yeah. It's not a movie that's going to be like, it's not made to be some incredible moving piece of art, but
Right.
still,
You
I feel
wanted to
like,
be entertained at least, or
yeah.
yeah, I feel like in the past we've had benders where over and over again we're talking about disappointing movie
Yeah.
after another, and I don't know, there's value to talking about like your disappointing experiences as well. You know, there's something
Yeah.
there as well. So I'm gonna go back to January, because there's a stretch where there's moments where I wasn't just watching 2023 flicks. I had a time in January where it was like right after I get back from the holiday, my holiday break, and I catch a crazy flu, where I have ridiculous fever, I have headache too. It sucked how I, physically how I felt. However, it let it I was a very good Cinnabum during this time, because I woke and I actually was really happy to wake up every day, even though I felt like shit, and be like, wow, exciting, what am I gonna watch today? Like, I have an excuse to just watch everything right now as much as I can. So I like that so much more than working, even though I feel really sick. And so I watched a lot, and I think the first, say, theme of my bender, that I'll is going to be things that Luke is just getting to now that he's very behind on, touch, and he lives in his own world. So the first thing I'm gonna bring up is something that you talked about a lot, but I never saw until now. And that everyone has talked about in the film world, Ty West's X and Pearl. I watched during this time. I finally got to those. Yeah, I like. Of course, I liked them a lot. I saw why the hype is there. Just great, great things for cinema. Love the influences of Boogie Nights meets Psycho. Love how it's shot on film. Love Mia Goth's performances. Especially in the second one. Yeah, they're both really good. I would definitely watch them again. I don't know, which one do you like more if you had to pick?
I think I liked Pearl more, but I think when after I saw it, I thought that, but I didn't know if it was just because it was the most recent one I saw, because I really did like both of them, and I liked that they're sort of in the same world. But yeah, like
But like
there's
kind
like
of like
the
different
prequel to
movies,
it.
very,
yeah
yeah, like different movies too,
yeah
which is
very
what's
different.
wild. Yeah.
yeah yeah I want to say I liked Pearl more. But it's really close, and I think, yeah, they're just really interesting, and I like that there's someone who's doing sort of this. There's a director doing this original, horror series that they can kind of take into these different they can take into these different avenues. Like even the new Maxine, which is the third one in this series that I think comes out this year. It's all a part of the same sort of storyline, but I think it's set in the 80s, and it has this very like
Who's
80s look to it.
Maxine in the First.
I can't. I'm gonna have to look this up. I can't remember. Well, Mia Goth is playing Maxine. Now, who is
Oh, Maxine is Mia Goth's character in the original.
Yes. So she, yeah, in the original, she plays both Maxine, who is the adult film actress, and
Yeah, so she's going back to that, I
Pearl.
guess.
Yeah. So yeah, I think what it, this might be a prequel to X, in a way.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if there, I don't think there's been any trailer or anything out for it yet, but I know after Pearl came out, they already had like this logo of Maxine, and it's like Maxine with three X's, and it's this very like 80s retro futuristic font.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I just I like look forward to these things like Jordan Peele, like
Yeah.
they're the, like I feel like you can be very creative in the horror genre, and people like Ty West and Jordan Peele are making these original movies that have their own I guess vibe to them, for lack of a better word. But yeah, so yeah, I'm glad you finally got to them.
Yeah, no, for sure. Then like they're both, I think like X is more fun, maybe Pearl is scarier and maybe what maybe more ambitious of a, especially the performance, but like they're both so great in their own way. And they're so like fan almost fan fictiony like for film nerds, like if say a film school dude was gonna make something whatever they wanted and it actually everyone saw it and it was actually really good, you know, like it's like these are kind of film nerds like wet dream horror movies.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean that like X has a lot to do with being like an independent film shoot too with I guess X was kind of like was that compared to like Texas Chainsaw Massacre a little bit too, or is that just maybe more of like the setting?
I think the setting for sure. And there's probably like, I don't know, a lot of, I don't know Texas Chainsaw as well as others. But I'm sure there's parallels to like the way they build the suspense around the far around the setting. I bet. Yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like he really took like a lot of different elements from like famous horror movies, or just yeah, like Boogie Nights, like you said too, and
Yeah.
yeah, combined it into this new world. Yeah, cool.
Well, and I think I remember you saying, like, on the whatever bender it was that you brought these up, you were like, it's like Boogie Nights meets in a horror movie or Boogie Nights meets Psycho. You were like saying something like that. And I was like,
Probably.
I remember that, like, I like lit up and I was like, oh my God, I have to see that. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I finally have. But now at least I'm up to date. So yeah, that's X and Pearl to start off.
Oh, if it's a good analogy, I probably did come up with it, you know. I'm just coming up with so many good analogies all the time, I forget.
Yeah, that's not actually the filmmaker didn't even have those movies in mind.
Yeah,
John just
I
like
called him up and told him that's what it was.
John just elevated it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, the next one I'll do is I teased it a little bit when we were talking before, but the next one is a rewatch, but it's a movie I haven't watched since I was a kid, and it's 10 Things I Hate About You. Have you seen
I've never
this?
fully seen it. I mean, like it's one that's on TV all the time and
Right.
I've, you know, I know of it very well, but like I don't, I've never full watched it in full.
Yeah, and so like I mentioned before, this was on TV. We were just having our coffee in the morning. Like it was just one of those mornings where we didn't have any plans or anything, so we didn't know what
This
to
was
do. And
Carly's revenge.
yeah, and we had just a few days before we had seen Zone of Interest, and I think we might have watched another more artsy movie in that past like couple of weeks too. And we started watching it, and she had never seen it before. And I have an older sister, and so I like this movie, Bring It On. Like I felt like I got into like teen movies like this. I
Earlier.
got into them as in had watched them with my older sister growing up. So like stuff like this was like familiar to me, and I remember like kind of liking it when I was growing up, but not really remembering it. And when we like just like first started watching it, she was like really into it, and she's like, "We like, I'm ready to watch the whole thing." And it was just kind of like something we randomly put on.
You did not share that enthusiasm, however.
Yeah, and yeah, as we started watching it, I mean, it is a really, it's just
But
one of
then you
these.
cried at
Yeah, then I
the
was like, yeah, I was
end.
crying, and I just, yeah, I professed my love for her, and yeah, no,
I love you. I'm
was like,
sorry.
let's renew our vows. Yeah, I was, but I did enjoy it, and I still think it's, you know, it's not one of these teen movies that it's like, you know, where I think of like Accepted, which we did an episode on with Brendan. That was like a movie that was really like personally loved that growing up, and it was
Sure, me
something that
too.
always stuck with me. Whereas this isn't one of those, and I could tell why while watching it again. And it's very much a movie of its time too. Like, it is so 1999, and but
It's like
that's kind of a good
like
thing too.
popular, but it doesn't age well. Is that like the deal?
Yeah, definitely. It's one where you can get into it for nostalgic reasons, but it's also watching it now, it's like, wow, people like kind of took this seriously as a movie still. You know, it's got Julia Stiles, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I gotta look at who else is this. Heath Ledger, of course.
That's mainly what I know it for, is like that's like what he got big off of.
David Krumholtz, Gabrielle
Oh, I
Union.
like that. Oh, wow.
And also Larry Miller, who I feel like when we were growing up, Larry Miller always played a dad or like a principal. He was always like a kind of a hard-nosed older guy in like every teen or kids movie. And yeah, so it's I still recommend watch if you haven't seen it since the 90s or you haven't seen it, I still think you should watch it if you're at all interested in like 90s, early 2000s teen comedies. But there's like the ob just like such obvious like cliches of high school and the different cliques and groups and everything. But Heath Ledger has it is really incredible to see how he is in this compared to how he is 6 years later in The Dark Knight. I think it's 6 years. It might be, I don't know, Dark Knight's like 2008 or something. Anyway, it's almost 10 years, but his American accent is so bad in this that I feel like they made there's some like plot line that they just like threw into the script to say that he like spent part of his childhood in Australia or something. There's some like weird random thing like, oh, I was in Australia for the first, you know, 8 years of my life. And I feel like they just say that because they're like, all right, we got to have this hunky guy be our male lead in here, but his American accent stinks. So just make something up that he was in Australia or whatever. But anyway, yeah, that's all about Heath. He's still great in this. And it was honestly kind of sad to see him too, because then Carly and I just started talking about like, oh man, like what a bummer like to die like before the biggest role of his career where he's like still remembered so well to this day. Like, yeah, really tragic. But yeah, 10 things about 10 things I hate about you was the palate cleanser for after watching Zone of Interest.
It makes
And
sense. The Zone
and
of
yeah, it was
Interest,
good. Yeah.
the Bummy Best Picture is a
Yeah.
lot.
Yeah. Bummy Best Picture, Zone of
Very
Interest.
heavy flick
Yeah. You
I drank
need
a
something like
yerba
this.
mate before, so I rock and rolled to the
Yeah,
Zone of Interest,
oh
man.
yeah. You're a modern day rock and roller,
You know,
yeah.
that like that synth overture at the beginning started, and I was like, ooh, I'm in it, man.
Yeah,
I'm
let's
in the
go.
zone of interest.
I'm in the zone
We
of
are in
interest.
the zone of interest. All right, cool. Is that everything about 10 Things I Hate About You?
Yep.
Are you done, John? Can
Yeah.
I go?
Yes, all right. I'll stop.
All right, I'll follow up yours with a similar, chick flick genre 90s thing. All right. Because I watched two. Ooh. Now, it's not a movie bender without, you know, some rom-com reports from Luke, I feel like.
Yeah.
And so towards the end of February, so it's already past Valentine's Day, you know, but I guess I'm still feeling the vibes of it, you know.
So I watched
Pretty Woman on February 28th, which I had never seen. I think I mainly know it for references. I mainly know it for that Office episode where they do Pretty Woman with Dwight. You know, so Dwight gets disrespected by the mall. So they like, we're going to Pretty Woman. You got to Pretty Woman them. And it becomes a whole storyline in the Office.
Because he was covered in beet juice. And
And I think he has an accent or something like that.
Yeah.
So anyways, I finally watch Pretty Woman so I can see what they're referencing in that Office episode I've seen however many times. I also feel like you just hear in when you're listening to movie talk from people that Pretty Woman just gets brought up fairly regularly, especially for just being iconic and just being in the rom-com world. And I think helped launch the Julia Roberts, express, helped light the coals of the train that Julia Roberts went on. Anyway, so sometimes when I watch these rom-coms, because I watch a good amount, and sometimes I'll watch them and I'll be like, this was really weird. What am I watching? I'm watching something. I forget which Julia Roberts movie it was that I watched where I felt this way. Notting Hill. With Julia Roberts and Hugh Grant. I'm watching that and I'm thinking, what the hell am I watching? This is like something my mom would watch probably while she's folding her socks after work in the 90s or whatever. I don't, just something like that. In her bedroom, just felt like so out of my world. Kind of interesting, but you kind of feel like, why am I choosing to be in this world tonight? I guess out of all,
I can watch whatever I want and I'm choosing to watch this right now.
I am, no one's got a gun to my head and I'm doing choosing to do this. Pretty Woman, on the other hand, I'm watching and I'm like, okay, I can tell why this is popular, I can tell why this is a hit, why it's referenced. Because this is, in my opinion, a damn good movie. Richard Gere in this is like a filthy rich finance guy who he buys what's left of struggling companies and he sells them off. Like companies that are just struggling tremendously. There's probably some business word for it that I don't know, but he, like a shark, he just kind of sees something dying. And he just eats it up and he sells it. And then Jason Alexander is like his lawyer who is always like with him for these deals, these big deals. So he's filthy rich. He's very disciplined. And he's just kind of in this loop of doing that, which is very, selfish and probably lonely as well. And he's in Los Angeles doing this and he has no idea where to go. He's on Hollywood Boulevard where there's a lot of prostitutes at this time. I think Hollywood Boulevard did have a lot of prostitutes during this period of time.
A guy in a Spider-Man costume.
Hollywood Boulevard now is like, have you been ever? It's dark Disneyland is what Hollywood Boulevard is. The amount of kids on it, you'll just be so shocked that parents actually take their kids to this place.
Yeah.
Because it's a fucked up place. But I think back then it had it was more like
back then they had prostitutes and it was nice.
The good old days.
It was
right?
nice and safe.
Kind of like what they say about New York. I feel back to our favorite place, in the world.
New York,
New
yeah.
York City. We're really New Yorkers here. This is where we really should be. The podcast would probably be intellectually on another level, you know, like our talking point. We would just,
We're
oh
so
man,
Upper West Side.
we should really take the pod to New York, baby.
That's where
But
it belongs.
I feel like people like say, oh yeah, you know, New York sucks now because like it's so corporate. It feels so owned by big businesses. It feels like a mall. It's Disneyland. And then they're like, I want it to be in the good old days where, you know, there was so much more crime and, you know, shit like that, like where it's like Taxi Driver or something like that. I feel like there's a similarity there. But anyways, Julia Roberts is, you know, she's a really young girl. She's a prostitute with a personality on Hollywood Boulevard. Richard Gere picks her up exclusively for directions, and she directs him back to his hotel in Beverly Hills, where he has like this, you know, I don't know, executive suite, penthouse, with a view. And everyone in the hotel knows him. They're there to serve him. And Julia Roberts suddenly stands out incredibly at this hotel because she's a prostitute and it's obvious. And so they hang out there for the night. And Richard Gere seems to feel a responsibility for her. And he then hires her basically for the week to like act as his date for all these like business meetings for this company he's trying to buy. So she ends up basically becoming a resident at this hotel for like the week. And that is when like the big like office moment comes where he gives her his cr credit card to go on Rodeo Drive and buy clothes so she can look more sophisticated. She goes into a store and these women are like, you can't afford anything in here, honey. And then she feels so bad about it. And later she shows up and there's this big line where she's like, you work on tips, don't you? Big mistake for not serving me. And it's actually like kind of a letdown because in The Office, they revolve around a whole episode around it. But in this movie, it's really a small thing.
Yeah, just like a scene.
It's really just a scene. And I'm just kind of like, oh, there it is. You know, I was thinking like, oh, this scene's gonna be so like epic, but yeah, maybe it's because I have that build up in my head, you know,
Yeah.
right?
High expectations, yeah.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But yeah, and then they end up falling in love, blah blah blah. I watched Runaway Bride
Yeah,
after
I was gonna
that.
say that's the next one you gotta. I'm sure you had seen. That was my guess. That's the
You,
next one.
okay. So yeah, have you seen it?
I saw both of these when I was like younger with my like I remember my family renting these
Okay.
from like Hollywood Video and watching them as a family, but I don't remember hardly anything about them. So it would be worth a rewatch for me for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Runaway Bride being on TV. I don't really remember it at all, but yeah, so I watched that next. That is again Richard Gere and Julia Roberts. And it is directed by Gary Marshall and different screenwriters. But yeah, so Runaway Bride, on the other hand, is significantly worse. There's definitely moments in it where you're like, oh, this is kind of like a quality, this could be a quality movie. But it just, I felt the way that they go with the direction of the plot, it brings it down personally. And it's far more sillier. You can't take it as seriously. Richard Gere is writing an article to save his journalism career in New York City
Oh.
about, yeah, it all comes back.
Oh.
About, you know, this woman who notoriously leaves every man at the altar because she has incredible
That's
commitment
right.
issues. But yet she, you know, she's a small town girl in this, and she's always marrying these guys, having these small town weddings. It's in one of those small towns outside of New York that I don't know, but I know there's like a million where all the like rich people, Jerry Seinfeld types, end up moving, you know, out of the city and getting a house. when their careers blow up. Maybe I'll do that when we after we take the podcast to New York. We'll take the podcast to Long Island.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. We'll go out to Montauk.
Exactly. Well, all the Westchester, I think, is another one. I got White a house Plains. In Westchester. There's all these areas.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's in, I think, one of those in this, and she's in this small town where they just hang out in the local shops. Like Joan Cusack owns a barber shop in this, and she's in it a lot. Yeah, eventually in it, Richard Gere just kind of talks, you know, she's like, you're going to leave this guy at the altar again. I know, like, because I'm a journalist. I'm just like tracking the story, and you should marry a real guy, you know, someone who really cares about you. Hey, like me. And that just gets thrown in there. And then, you know, they have a wedding and then he's like, no, don't run. And he chases after her. And it's like a big deal. Weird flick to watch, man. Definitely. voluntarily. Yeah. So far worse. Wished it was better. For instance, in Pretty Woman, Richard Gere is actually like fantastic. I think he's really good in it. Not the same. This, he's kind of like lazy. Like he's like really good in Pretty Woman as this like really sophisticated businessman who's really loaded and rich and like you buy it. Not so much as this kind of sloppy journalist from New York City.
That's interesting. Like in the 90s, there was a lot of this, like it's Julia Roberts and Richard Gere and multiple like rom-coms together.
The pairings are Ryan. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I can't think if there's like a modern version of that though. Like today. Okay, I can't really think of anything.
Like Sydney Sweeney and that one guy it could turn into now.
I guess. Yeah, that's true.
I didn't see that, but I think there was a joke on like SNL that she had where it's like, me, I am totally not. That's just a rumor. I'm not in love with Glenn Powell. I'm not dating him. And then like shows him in the audience and they're alluding that they're actually dating or like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, people would be here for that for sure. If that turned into something, you know.
Like, yeah, the rom-com game nowadays is so, like, weird and not like that it's hard to picture what people would want in terms of, say, that pairing today if they really were going to, like, do that. Like, what do the people really want? Like, I think anyone but you, is it? Is, like, very just everyone, they were just thinking, let's take the hottest people there are, like just it's purely sexual.
That's all you need.
And
let's
do that. And that's what the movie is too. It's like, ooh, they're like pretending to like touch each other when they're like touched each other, even though they don't want it. And like, that's like what like the trailer looks like.
Yeah. Just creating sexual tension around these.
Yeah.
Very hot people. Yeah. It's
That's what it is. It's kind of, it makes you sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you sick.
Yeah, it really is just presenting these people as like, just to tap into the horniness of America. But yeah,
I feel
maybe it did well. I don't know how
I feel invaded.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Excuse me, please.
I'll talk about this one next. I wish I could remember more about this now, because I really enjoyed it. And I hadn't really known too much about this movie. I don't even know if I'd really heard of it until I saw it streaming somewhere, wherever I watched it. Maybe Tubi. I've been watching a lot of Tubi lately. But The Passenger, the Jack Nicholson, Antonioni movie from the 70s.
Let me look real quick to see if I've seen that.
It seems like one that you would have seen.
Yeah. I
that
think
you would
so.
Have like recommended.
Yep, I've seen it.
Yeah, so he's like a he's just a journalist in somewhere in like North Africa. He's just kind of over his life and his job and everything, and then this guy he befriended in his hotel, who I guess they kind of are like sharing a room in a way.
It's like
Yeah,
very
he
contained, right?
and he comes back after being like stranded out in the desert, and the guy is dead. I think he just had a heart attack, or it was just something natural. It wasn't any foul play or anything. And Jack Nicholson decides on a whim to just take on this guy's identity and pretend that he was the one that died. And so that's he goes and lets the hotel know that his name is the guy that died, and say that, Jack Nicholson died in that room. And so that goes back to his wife, who is like having an affair with having an affair. And yeah, and it starts this whole, I guess, mystery that he's not involved with, of people trying to figure out, like thinking that he's dead, but then trying to, figure out where he is or whatever. And then him going off to live a completely new life and meeting this new woman and traveling around. And yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was just a really great like 70s movie. And I don't know, just kind of this like idea of, not that I've never seriously considered this, but just that idea that anyone can relate to, of just like feeling like totally over whatever you're going through in life and wanting to just become someone else. It's like that freeing feeling, and he just be like frees himself to be like a different person. And yeah, I think it's just a really great movie. It has a really, really good ending too, that like there's like a final scene that it really like is like really meaningful. It's just like the subtle dialogue that happens. Yeah, and some of the cinematography was really cool too. So yeah, just a really good like 70s Jack Nicholson movie.
I don't remember this like super well, but yeah, I just know that it is one of those where, like, if you're looking for a 70s, like, real 70s cinema gritty, like, film bro type movie, but in a good way, like, that it's definitely one of those, and it gets really real for sure. I recall too, and yeah, Antonioni is just a master, as well, of this time, and yeah, Jack Nicholson during this time really, like, he just like flowed between so many different camps of filmmakers, and like he was in so many great things, and he's like the perfect everyman. Like, I mean, like, there's Five Easy Pieces, there's this, there's what was the Hal Ashby movie again? There's the Last
Less
Detail.
detail.
Yeah, Chinatown, The Shining, him and
Shining.
Easy Rider. He's just, yeah, he's just unreal. And that, oh, and the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He's just was on a tear. Yeah, and there's always more to see. Like, say, it's like that you'll forget. Say, like, The Passenger, first, for instance.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with this at all. But yeah, it's funny. Like Jack Nicholson nowadays, he just seems like that old guy, that old celebrity guy at Lakers games. And but he's done all this like really interesting stuff back in like the 70s and 80s. And then even when we were growing up too, like I think I just pictured him as like the guy in As Good as It Gets, or something else with Diane Keaton. What's
Oh, something's gotta give.
Something's Got to Give. Yeah, just like kind of this old
I
creep.
knew of him in like Bucket List.
Bucket List. Yeah.
Morgan Freeman, yeah.
Yeah. Just this like really kind of older, disheveled guy. But yeah, when you go back into his like early filmography, there's a lot of like cool stuff. Yeah, I really like The Passenger. I think it was on Tubi, so if anyone's interested out there, check
Nice.
that first. But yeah.
Unlike John, I am not as good at following new comedians and following all the comedians that there are, especially nowadays. There's like a lot. Like, way more than back in, like, the old days where there was like, I feel it was like three routes to get big as a stand-up comedian, and like it was like you get on SNL or you get on Johnny Carson or you get on, you get discovered by one of these few things. Now it's not like that. It's not like that anymore, which is, I think is good and bad. So I am not in touch with as many comedians as I'd like to be. For someone who really loves the form, of course, and I love comedy a lot. Maybe more than like, you know, any of this shit. I like comedy the most.
More than Pretty Woman.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I have not seen as many comedians, John, is because I'm watching like Runaway Bride and Pretty Woman. I need to look in the mirror. But yeah, I'm always like very impressed, and like I always kind of envy how many comedians you watch, because you always have someone to bring up of like someone did this random indie film this comedian did, which is really weird and interesting, or like a special they did or whatever. And you're really keeping up with Office Hours with Tim Heidecker. I wish I did that too, you know, stuff like that. I'd like to try to be better at that. And, you know, I'd also like to, you know, maybe say pick your brain for more comedians you're really into. Anyways, so this is me first seeing every Gerard Carmichael special.
Wow.
And I think there's some like little connection to like we both really like, say, Bo Burnham's directorial work. For instance, Eighth Grade, Inside. Mm-hmm. We're like out of like a Bo Burnham generation of like, we were there when he posted his, you know, YouTube videos and stuff like that. So it's kind of, it's cool to like see him direct. I love the Tambourine Chris Rock special. I think that is a classic. Bo Burnham directed that.
I didn't actually know that. Well,
yeah. Yeah. So it's cool that he's like become a, you know, renowned stand-up director. And like sometimes I think like, what does it matter if like, say, like Spike Lee directed, you know, Gerard Carmichael live at the Comedy Store? Like in the end, it's two cameras following the one comedian. Like, what is so special that you got this? Like, if Scorsese, you know, did a Chappelle special, could we tell? If like that was Scorsese, like really, you know what I mean? Like, does it really give them that much room to stretch their directing wings? I don't know. But like, I will say during these Gerard Carmichael specials, Bo Burnham does have a distinct thing he's doing by making you very intimate Gerard in these standups, especially in Rothaniel. Of course, the trajectory of a comedian in this is kind of, for this guy's specials, is like, it's kind of like unprecedented for me in the way this man like kind of evolves. Cause I think stand-up comedy is usually so like, you know, I'm here to like tell jokes and make you laugh and, you know, blah. And that it's really that straightforward to the point where we're able to like impersonate people's acts so well or whatever, you know, stand-up is usually like, oh, here's this guy, he does this, he talks like this, we know what we're gonna get from him. And this guy is like kind of doing the opposite. He's like turning it on you each time. And in the final one, he like decides to even go like, he's really like going about it like, I'm gonna be true to who I am versus like even over being funny. Which I'm like, I like seeing that. I really do. Like, have you seen Neil Brennan's last two Netflix specials?
Yeah, about Blocks and Three Mics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Neil Brennan is like really good at being like, okay, I'm going to like tell really dark stuff about myself that are true, but I'm also going to have killers in the middle so that they like offset. So it doesn't get too like dark in here.
Yeah.
You know,
he still has plenty of jokes to like bring it back to comedy. Yeah.
Right. And in that, I think those are both brilliant stand-up specials. Cause he's like,
yeah, me too.
Like, I love when like people are really honest on stage too, like, and they're like revealing themselves. As I like the duality of like I'm revealing myself and I'm also being like very like funny. Like, I'm also like staying true to the craft of stand up, but I'm also like really like putting myself out there on who I am. Like, there's like some comedians, like say like Jerry Seinfeld is not that. Jerry Seinfeld is like straightforward. I'm going to just do my material, and it's all about just crafting the most perfect Pop-Tart joke. And I am not here to like be vulnerable or reveal myself. I'm like putting on a show. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. By the way, he's directing a Pop-Tart movie, which I'm a little nervous about that. Like, I think that could be really terrible. Like, so
I know.
Terrible.
I saw the trailer for it, and I was just like, well, I'm definitely gonna watch this, but I can't tell if it's just gonna be absolutely ridiculous or not. But Jerry Seinfeld wrote and directed a Pop-Tart movie. That's not what
so
I
have you
expected.
have you heard him on Marin ever?
There's
like
Seinfeld?
one he did on Marin. Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of didn't. I remember they didn't get along or something. Like,
so they kind of go into this exact thing where like Mark's trying to like talk about this exact subject of like, Mark's like, I'm, you know, really trying to like, you know, when I was young, I tried to discover who I am and like on the stage and blah, blah, blah. And like, he's trying to talk about that with Jerry, and Jerry's like very stubbornly like, yeah, well, that's cool for you, but there better be laughs in the middle there. And he's like, Mark's kind of like, okay, you know. And I was also watching like a live with Mark Maron one day, and he's like, so, my, you know, that was a tough time because Lynn Shelton, my girlfriend, died. And then I had to go talk to the most emotionally withdrawn comedian ever.
That's so funny. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like they, when Mark Maron was on Office Hours, they might have talked about that too.
Right. Right. I remember that. I think I've seen the Heidecker like Seinfeld like impression, which is like so fantastic too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, but that's what's so great about Mark Maron is he found his, I don't know, not form or niche. Well, I guess maybe it's his like niche,
but you kind of like know that's him up there too. You like,
yeah,
that is him. It's effortless, and he's like a, but yet it's like, it is just perfection of stand-up, like what he's built it to. Like, I saw him at the Comedy Store, and he gets up there and he's just like, I went today, he makes like some political statement about how like he thinks the right is fascist and the real quick, and then he goes into, I was going today to the hardware store, they didn't have this at the hardware store, and he's just talking about his day, he's like talking about running an errand somewhere. But I was just like, this is just, I just start dying like immediately because of the tone of Mark Maron and like he's just old dude complaining thing he's got going on.
And Seinfeld kind of like, I don't know, that persona, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way sometimes because like, yeah, that is funny. Like someone being completely honest about something that like really like irked them, ruined their day or just like something minor. Like that is funny. And it depends on maybe how the person says it. But I think I get annoyed sometimes with people like Seinfeld trying to like talk about jokes and so like seriously, like how that what comedy needs to be and all that.
But anyways, that brings me to say like Rathaniel. You know, Rathaniel is a piece of art. It really is. And I was watching this thing, and I also took an edible, and I was just it. I took an edible during this thing, and it fucked me up. I was just it got me so. This special made my mind so like curious and just openly thinking about things and just all this stuff. Cause it is such, it's the most vulnerable, one of the most vulnerable things you'll ever see. It is a guy evolving and as an artist, which is what you want to see too. However, I like wish I like it better when Gerard is funnier and like for sure. And I think the special is really great, but I don't know if like Jerrod Carmichael's now a funnier guy. You know what I mean? Maybe he's like more in touch with himself, maybe he's smarter, but I think he was funnier before. Kind of like I think 8 is a funnier special. Obviously, it's obviously a funnier special. It's not even like something I need to state as an opinion. But then I like, I feel like I saw him, like, say I watched his SNL, he hosts SNL. I feel like he's so experimental and different and finding him his new self. And he had such a phase of talking about like, his mom and all that stuff. That became a kind of his thing to the point where I'm like, all right, like it's almost like when Kanye started to be crazy and angry, and I'm like, not that level, but like where I'm like, oh man, I miss the old Jerrod. But like that's just like me. That's just like I don't like 100% think that, but I have those feelings, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I was actually just talking to one of my coworkers today about he's been working at Comedy Works for, I don't know, a long time now, that he's so like disillusioned with comedy now that it really takes a lot for him to laugh. But we were talking about like there's some people who we really like nowadays that they might not like make you laugh the hardest, but it's like you get to know they're like them as a person more, and hearing them talk, like you realize that maybe I wasn't laughing super hard at a lot of his like jokes and what he was saying, but it's like he's really likable. They're a really likable person,
They're like
and
engrossing speakers.
and that's so, while like Jerry Seinfeld is more of that, like that era of like Rodney Dangerfield, like just like joke, 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 like joke after joke. And I think Norm Macdonald is definitely more along those lines too. He wouldn't really be super honest
Well, it's like the
about
era of like
personal
we're
life.
being we're written comics, like we're magicians up here, kind of like we're ready, we're here to bring you the goods, pretty much. Like you're gonna see like a show,
And nowadays, just there's so many like pair excuse me, parasocial like relationships too that people like develop. And I think a lot of it too is people want to see someone who they can like, I don't know, connect with or relate to. But and then I think that, whether or not they had like so many jokes per minute, they just still like made them laugh, and they left like having a really good time, having like an evening with this person. So yeah, I feel like that makes sense what you're saying. I do get like that. Yeah, I wish, because I saw Marc Maron a few months ago too, and he was really going into like all these stories about himself and being very personal. And then it did get to a point where there was maybe a couple times where he was kind of, drawing out a story really long, that it was like, oh wow, we haven't like laughed in a while, but we're engaged. But I kind of want him to like, I
You're
hope this
really
like
into
pays
this.
off with a good like, with a good laugh too. I haven't gotten into his stand-up as much. I've seen Ruthaniel, but I don't think I've seen any of his other stand-up
You
specials.
should check out 8. 8 is 8 is
Cool.
like 8 is really good. Has a lot of yeah, I was dying during 8.
This is actually, I feel like I don't do this enough, is I just sort of, because I feel like we all can just scroll through these streaming services like endlessly and never decide what to watch. But this time, I don't know, I was just in this mindset where I had just gone to Amazon Prime randomly, and was just scrolling through to see what they had, and I stumbled across this movie called Strawberry Mansion. And the sort of the image that shows up when you go onto it on TV or whatever, it looks really interesting and kind of quirky. And so then I looked it up, and I saw it was like this, it was directed by these guys, Can Tucker Audley and Albert Burney, who some great names, but
Yeah.
they're they're just these indie filmmakers who made this movie, and I guess it was pretty popular at Sundance the year it came out. And so yeah, I thought it looked interesting, so I watched it, and I was like really surprised with how much I really loved this movie. And so yeah, Strawberry Mansion, it also stars Kin Tucker Audley, who was co-director on it.
Tucker.
Which I looked up his it's his Kin Tucker isn't his real name, but he is from Kentucky and that's
His
his
name's
stage
Tucker.
name now. So yeah. But in Strawberry Mansion, it's set in the future. And it's in this world where the people are fairly ridiculous in this world that it exists in. And it's the set design and effects are it's like Tim Burton, Terry Gilliam, and like Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou all like combined into one kind of it takes I feel like it takes from all of those like inspirations, because it's a very bizarre movie, but it's essentially the government now taxes your dreams and like what's in your dreams and everything. And the Kin Tucker, he plays this government agent who goes out to this remote mansion where this eccentric artist lives. She's an older woman and she's very yeah, she's just this artist who's so out there and sort of in love with like art and like the world, and she doesn't like she's on her own and lives in her own world kind of, and he has to audit her dreams because she hasn't like paid taxes on her dreams, so she has this whole like closet full of VHS tapes of all her dreams from like years and years and years, and so he goes through this like sort of VR type thing to tax her dream and to go through auditing her dreams. And there's like the government has found a way to like insert ads into your dreams. So there's like this one guy that shows up all the time and he's always like, oh, try that with a bowl of Cheerios or whatever, you know, selling something. And anyway, it turns out it's very like bizarre and weird. But then as it goes on, this guy starts to like, he, starts to really get moved by the dreams and the people in the dreams. And it's like this woman in there is almost like a younger version of this. I think it is supposed to be like a younger version of this artist woman. And he starts to like fall in love. And but yeah, he just gets really into this whole it's just emotion. He gets emotionally invested in into these dreams. And yeah, just the imagery is so fun and interesting and kind of and just weird. And yeah, I was really into it. It's just it takes a lot of these like weirdo elements from like those people I mentioned before, like Terry Gilliam and Tim Burton, Wes Anderson, and it's a very quirky indie comedy that I th
That's
also thought
really
was like
stylized.
yeah, really stylized and really like moving too. But all the I don't know, all of like the equipment and like sets in this are very like mechanical and retro. Like it doesn't look like futuristic like Blade Runner or something. It's like yeah, it's like a like 70s futuristic mechanical devices, and then that's what like it kind of makes it up. But yeah, I really liked it. And this is one, yeah, I just kind of stumbled on and really liked it a lot. And then I ended up watching another movie that these guys directed called Silvio,
Silvio.
which I guess is based off a vine of this guy who would be in a gorilla costume, which kind of made me like I kind of had these prejudgments about it because it was based on a vine. But you know, that's a way that people made creative things back in the day, and then they, you know, made a movie about it. But yeah, this one it stars this gorilla. It's a guy in a gorilla suit, but in this world, he's a gorilla to everybody, and he doesn't speak. And he just happens to stumble into this TV studio where they mistake him for like a guest on their like a wacky guest on their talk show, and he becomes famous just for smashing things. He's like the ape that smashes things on the show, and then he's and then that's what everybody expects of him and wants him to be. They want him to be that, and so he becomes famous, but then he like hates that that's who he's become, and it's just kind of a story about that. And it's kind of a it's a sweet like indie comedy too. It kind of it towards the end it made me lose a little bit of interest, but it still I think was along the same lines of the other one. It's just kind of a quirky weirdo indie comedy that has a lot of like heart to it too. So yeah, I was just glad that I randomly stumbled upon these, but I would highly recommend Strawberry Mansion
Yeah,
to anyone out there.
the recent weird indies that you didn't know about. Yeah. That's cool that
Strawberry
you were
Mansion
like, you
2021.
saw these suddenly like on streaming and you were just like, I don't know what the hell this is, but I'm down to give it a try, you know, like
That's what it was, just like
un
the imagery and yeah, it was just like weird enough that I got on board. I actually
Nice.
think Kentucker, he I think he's acted in some things too. Oh yeah, he was in like Her Smell,
Oh yeah.
VHS.
Okay. So all right.
He's acted
Okay.
in some
He's
things too.
around. He's around. So my last one is another one I'm late on. It's Red Rocket.
Oh yeah, nice.
Yeah. And yeah, I thought Red Rocket was great. I don't know how you feel about it, but like I think it's maybe my, I think it's my favorite of Sean Baker's movies. I was so on board, specifically because of like all the dialogue and Simon Rex's performance and just the like the way you follow around this like degenerate guy the whole time, and but yet he's so like he's so gross, but he's so entertaining and funny at the same time. And it's just so like entertaining to watch these Texans in this nothing town, like just have no, they just have no opportunity or anything going whatsoever. It's so like, it's so relatable to like the way I feel like the country has become to where there's certain people who just have no options. Yeah, like it's like I feel like in that town that he's in this movie, there's just this one factory, and then he's hanging out at the donut shop by the factory, and there is no other options for jobs anywhere. I mean, I've felt that in like when I moved out to LA, I remember just like I'm applying to like the simplest, like dumbest jobs that I don't even like want to do them, you know? But like I'm interviewing against tons of people and I'm just like, this is brutal. This isn't even a job I want, but I'm like competing with everyone. And like, I don't know. I just feel like there's a certain level, like if you're at a certain economic level nowadays, it's really hard. And like, I know this is like a cliche. I don't like being this person who says it, but like, you know, I like older people especially, or like, I don't know, some people just sit around and talk about, yeah, it's hard now. Like they do this over the people do that over the course of the years, you know, the like, yeah, it's hard now for people to get by at this point in time because of this reason, whether it's like, you know, the game is rigged against us all because this reason, you know, how are we, you know, like I don't like being the type who talks about like that just because it's just a tiresome conversation and it never really like leads to then people will give their ideas about like their ideologies on like usually like whether they're a capitalist or socialist or something like that, and then that gets really ugly. But yeah, I think one thing Red Rocket definitely gets right is that it does seem like, especially for a lot of people, like there's just not as much opportunity as like there used to be. And I think Red Rocket is taking it from a like sort of a Trump's America point of view of being like, I don't know about politics enough to really like make points like that. But I think there are a lot of people who believe that like Donald Trump, like, you know, what the ratings of Donald Trump boosting the economy are skewed because he made more money for like bigger businesses. And then like, you know, that like the people really at the bottom never did not, it did not really get better for them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Biden's not doing it either, but like, just because Red Rockets, when this came out, if Red Rocket came out this year, it'd be a Biden movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, it just depends when it comes out. But yeah, like I think Red Rocket manages to be like a really, like it's in Sean Baker's wheelhouse, but yet it's like, he's saying something about what's really going on right now. And I feel like he's always like doing that really well. Like Tangerine is like a practically a documentary of like the Hollywood area in LA. Like it's practically a documentary. And so he's really good at portraying realism, even if he's not shooting a physical documentary. They like, they always feel like really real people, which I always like. And then, yeah. And I found Red Rocket, like, I was engrossed the whole time. I found it so easy to watch. Yeah, for like a really like disgusting degenerate movie, it like really was kind of like my thing, Jordan, you know?
Yeah, Red Rocket's the only Sean Baker movie that I've actually seen.
That's
something that I'm late on is Florida Project and Tangerine, but just from everything I've heard about it, I've heard a lot of people talk about Florida Project and like in like real life, like recommend that one. And I still am upset I haven't seen it, but it sounds like this is what Sean Baker does. It's like what you were saying.
Yeah.
It's like these real people and these real like American situations.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of always from like lower America, you know, like where we all really don't want to be, like people, it's always people who we would say see on the street and be like walking right past you, you know,
yeah,
like that sort of thing.
Yeah, just get out of that neighborhood, just keep driving. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that makes me want to watch the Florida Project and Tangerine though. Yeah, because I've been wanting to, but just yeah, it's
they're really
spot.
Good. Yeah, they're really good. I think this is the best one, but they're really good as well.
Wow. Yeah. Well, good bender. That
we're back at the movie bender. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just gonna get back to doing more podcasting. That's really it. And just hoping everyone's enjoyed the other things we've done in the meantime, but we just really want to get back to doing things that we used to do when we didn't care about like promoting a brand or like, you know, following an algorithm of, I feel like, admittedly, like I think we fell into that a little bit, you know, but like we didn't like, it's not like we sold out like crazy, you know, we just like stopped doing movie benders.
Yeah, we gave up movie benders for marketability and but
we're here
that.
To say fuck that shit. I want to do a movie bender.
Yeah, we're going to do movie benders. We're going to do stuff that we want to do.
We're going to do movie benders and we're going to do real benders.
Yeah. And man, Luke, that, I can't tell if it's just like the perspective, but that water bottle looks massive.
It is. It is massive. It's not perspective.
Yeah.
I think it's a little perspective because it's not bigger than me.
Or yeah, right now it does look like it is figurehead.
See
Yeah.
what I mean? Like
Like it's your
it's
whole torso, it looks like.
yeah. I'm just holding like a thing this
Just each episode,
Yeah.
the water bottle gets bigger and bigger.
No, yeah, man, this is kind of my new thing. I carry this water bottle around.
Nice.
It's who I,
You gotta stay hydrated.
yeah, it's who I am now for sure.
Hey, yeah, that's a very Colorado thing. Everyone in Colorado's got a water bottle, so I hear you.
Yeah, I think it's very vulnerable of me to have a water bottle where people could see I am displaying how much water I've drank to this day.
Yeah.
You know,
That's a lot of
I'm like,
personal information.
yeah, and then people will comment. They're like, "Oh, wow, you're like doing well." And I'm like, "Shut up. Leave me alone." Gosh. It's for me, not
None of your
you.
business. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, man. So many nosy people in LA. Yeah.
Right, but I love this water bottle, and that's why I'm willing to deal with all that shit.
That's the price you gotta pay.